Hello. Welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join us for a visit with leaders in personal and cultural transformation. This is Renee Beth Poindexter, sitting in for Pathways host Paul O'Brien. Today I have a fabulous guest, a man named Ridgely Goldsborough. He's written over 8 books in the past 5 years, and one of them we're going to talk about today. This book is called The Great Ones, A Business Fable, The Transformative Power of a Mentor. The other things that you need to know about Ridgely is that he started his first enterprise at the age of 16, and for the past 3 decades, he's created over 38 companies and 400 employees in 35 countries. This man is a mentor of mentors. Right now, he is helping organizations and clients with a message process that really is grounded in emotional intelligence, because 5 of the books he's written dealt with the topic emotional intelligence, and people need to know how to be more authentic in their message to attract people who are looking for them. So, Ridgely, I see you also you have lawyer in your genes too.
I do.
And so you are just a master of so many trades, and you, as you summarize, your life's work is to expose men and women to excellence through personal development and a commitment to continuous growth in all areas, mental, spiritual, and physical. It's such a pleasure to be with you today.
Well, thank you very much. My kids basically said, "Dad, you're just a geek." Okay. And so I embraced my geekness and decided that that's okay to be a geek and to be a continuous learner and to collect degrees or do whatever you can to continuously expand to the next level, whatever that looks like.
Fabulous. Well, along the way, you've been becoming this amazing mentor, and this book called The Great Ones, The Transformative Power of a Mentor is what I want to focus on today. So it's such an inspiring story, and the way in which you tell it is really unique because it's almost like 2 books in one. Could you tell us about how you came up with the concept, and what were you trying to demonstrate by having the code of the great ones on the left side and the right side a fable of a young boy and an old man? What's the point of doing it that way?
I wish I could share with you that I had this brilliant inspiration that came divinely from above or something like that. But actually, I was talking to Robert Allen, who wrote the 1 Minute Millionaire, and he did this. And I said, "Robert, can I use that idea? That's a great idea." And he said, "Yeah, sure." So the truth is, I have to give credit to Robert Allen. He was the one who gave me the idea. I thought it was a great idea to have the story, which is what captivates people, but then also take the lessons from the story and codify them in some way to make them more useful. So my reasoning behind it may not have been the same as Robert's, but it wasn't my original idea, Renee Beth. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. But it really drives home the point. There's a lot of subtle messages there that what you're representing about the great one. What is a great one, and how do you become one?
Yeah, so you know, it's interesting because I had the privilege and honor of signing a lot of those books, and I always sign it the same way. Renee Beth, always be a great one. And I do believe that that's individual for each person. I remember that I was speaking to a Buddhist leader in Los Angeles, and someone in the room asked him what was happiness. And it turns out, and his answer was the following: "Every day, my coffee tastes a little bit better, and my wife is a little more beautiful." And I thought, okay, that is so profound and deep. I just want to be like you, okay?
Exactly.
So the great one to me is that person who is in continuous development, always aspiring to what is the next thing. How do I get to the next level? What do I do to expand my consciousness, myself, my ability, my inspiration for others? To me, that's what being a great one is all about. It's not a finite place. It's a becoming as opposed to a being.
Right, exactly. Or a doing, a human doing.
Like, that's right. There's a lot of those out there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you drive home a lot of points. And, you know, you talk about the code. The code is 12 edicts that you gathered through interviews with over 200 people. So tell us a little bit more about this, because as I read this book, I can see so many applications for it. I can see it happening in schools. I can see it happening with families. I can see it happening with businesses. Like, we can just get these 12 things down, we will have happiness in our lives. So tell us a little bit about the edicts and how, well, you know, first of all, you interviewed 200 people and you found a pattern. It became the edict.
I did. Right? I did. It was fascinating because what I did is I modeled what Napoleon Hill did in writing Think and Grow Rich. And I thought, the difference is I can film these people. I can film them and I can capture that and see if I see any differences between what Napoleon Hill did and what I did. And what was fascinating, Renee Beth, was that literally after 10 interviews, and almost all of them were very successful, some of them millionaire, well, all of them were millionaires. Most of them were billionaires. And not most of them, some of them were billionaires. And I, after about the 10th interview, I knew what the answers were going to be because they were universal across the board. It was always, here are the two most important things you need to know about success. Here is, here are the foibles. Here are the ways that people sabotage themselves. Oh, and by the way, then there was the X factor, which shows up at the end of the code. And right. That only happened at the absolute highest levels of success,
right.
Which is the fact that, which we can talk about or not, up to you.
Okay, we'll get to that. I mean, the idea is like, gosh, if everybody, I read Think and Grow Rich, I've used it in several masterminds, and, you know, it's like, Napoleon Hill was right on, but I can just imagine the difference with you. You know, it starts off with yours is like, I'll just cover the first three, make a decision, and then, you know, conceive and execute a plan and take full responsibility. So those are really powerful, but it's also within the context of you're talking about the code is focused on prosperity, and then there's 12 steps to have a prosperous, abundant life. So why did you focus on prosperity, and why did you start with decision, plan, and responsibility?
So I focused on prosperity because it's easy to measure. In other words, a lot of times somebody says, well, I'm in great health. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean you can step out of your door and knock out a 10K? Or does that mean that you don't get tired walking up the stairs? Does that mean that you are eat healthy all the time? Or that you have cheat days 6 days a week and eat healthy once? It's very subjective, right? And people talk about happiness. Well, what does that mean? Well, that means that my wife didn't yell at me this morning, or does that mean that you looked at her and smiled and felt amazing about it? It's just so subjective. Whereas financial prosperity is relatively straightforward. You're either paying attention and have your finances together, or you don't. And then there's levels and levels and levels, because there are 24 hours in a day, yet some people make $10 an hour, some people make $100 an hour, some people make $1,000 an hour, and some people make $100,000 an hour.
Right.
It's still the same 24 hours, but the one that's the easiest to kind of gauge and pay attention to is that financial prosperity, because then it's not really a big debate. You either is or you isn't.
Exactly. So there's a similar code. It's like, and this code is it's inner work. It's like you have to do the inner work in order to attract the difference that you can make in the world. And once I kind of get a sense that the most people who figure out how they're wired and they can bring that to their contribution, the more value they see that they have that they can give away. And is that how people become abundant?
Well, for sure, because here's the thing. No one wants to play to their weakness. If you want to play to your strength so that you have an impact with what you're doing, well, the first step is to figure out what that strength is. You have to know yourself, you know, physician, know thyself kind of thing. This is a bit of a diagnostic process of figuring out who are you, what do you do well, what can you bring to the world on a consistent basis for a long enough period of time to have an impact. So even if somebody does something well, if they don't like it, if they don't enjoy it, they're not gonna stick around. So you gotta really know yourself enough to say, this is what I do well, this is what I enjoy doing, I wanna play to my strengths, and therefore I can, for the long term, continue to put out this body of work and support others and make a big difference in my life and thereby become abundant. And okay. Oh, by the way, I just wanna add a point here. when you are doing that and bringing your unique gift to the world, then abundance is much more of a state of mind, because you could even have ups and downs and bumps and along the journey. But if you're bringing your best self to the party on an ongoing basis, you feel good about that, you keep going, and therefore over the long term, one of the, in the book, The Great Ones, you find that at the top of the list, 100% of the time, I mean, there was not a single interview I ever did that the two most common always came up as the top of the list conditions for success or characteristics of success were perseverance and the willingness to pay the price. It was always the same. Are you going to stick it out for long enough? And are you willing to do what it takes? If you're willing to do those two things, then it becomes a little bit like my mentor, Jim Rohn, used to say, how long should you keep trying? Until.
Right. However long it takes, right?
Until. Yeah.
So that sort of relates to, yeah, but the people, I think in a lot of ways, this is where the emotional intelligence comes in. I mean, you've written 5 books. I've got to read them, all of them, on emotional intelligence, because I've been the woman on the executive consulting team that would bring emotional intelligence to the room full of engineers, you know, mm-hmm. and it's challenging. It's like emotional intelligence. It's something, and I think that's why you parallel your story with a young boy learning with an old man. You know, that's a fable, but you're driving home a fact that says something how who we are becoming over the timeline of our life is an inside mm-hmm. job, which does relate to emotion, but many people are only in their mental intelligence and don't have access to their emotional intelligence. So something about bringing forward this patience and courage and passion, how do people, I mean, if you know what you're passionate about, like find your purpose, you know, if people say find your purpose, like it's out there. The purpose comes from within. Is that right? I mean, because if you have your purpose and your passion, it seems like you got to want it more, as you said. If you got it, you got to want it more. Doesn't it come from passion?
Well, so I think it does. The funny thing is that it has to be developed. In other words, people who have bad habits and bad rituals that they're associated with have a much, much harder time ever accomplishing something great. When I said perseverance and the willing to pay the price, you could also call that discipline. And in the absence of discipline, the reality is chances of success, at least sustained success, are very small. So we have to figure out what are the habits that I can get into? How can I prepare myself? I remember that watching Zig Ziglar, the great motivator, and he said, okay, who here took a shower today? Great. Who here washed their teeth today? Great. Who here washed their mind? And suddenly there's a silence that happens there. So what are you doing on a daily basis to prepare yourself? What are you doing to develop that muscle, that EQ, that emotional quotient? Doesn't matter how smart you are. If you have more desire and drive that is nurtured and cultivated and fed on an ongoing basis, someone with much less talent, so to speak, can go much further based on their emotional quotient, based on how driven they are to continue no matter what, doing what they believe in. And that, I believe, is something that you can develop. Somebody may be, they're born with a certain IQ, but you can build your EQ. You can build that through proper habits, proper rituals, whatever that may look like for you. Spending time in prayer, meditation, etc. I personally am a Buddhist, so I chant every day. So whatever it may be that is good for you, you've got to do that thing so that you can go out and attack the day every day with power and purpose and vigor and abandon and kind of like feeling like I always go out in the day feel like, okay, not sure what the day is going to throw at me, but I'm ready. Let's go.
Exactly. Let's roll. Yeah. So, but for you, in order to discipline yourself, you know, in your own journey to learn, I mean, you talk about your black belt and, you know, that you actually did physical things to shift your mind that impacts your emotions. Like we people talk about mind, body, spirit, and heart, like they're all separate. Mm-hmm. And in reality, they're all aligned. And yet I really see how this young boy, through the relationship with the old man, who is a fisherman who looks like he's not doing anything. And the boy is critical of him for so long. And then he comes to a realization about what the old man represented for him. So you're relating something, I think it's almost a personal story of your own transformation along with your own experience about what the young boy learned. So first of all, how did you, because this idea is like, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do these habits. But there's something still missing if people are just doing actions and not integrating it in an emotional level within themselves. It's just another item that they're doing. When and how do people begin to integrate the emotional well-being like the young boy saw in the fable? You've learned this from thousands of people you've worked with. When does the light go on? Like the being is different than the doing.
I think it's different for each individual, but I will say the following. If you are not doing something to continuously nurture your mind and continuously, I think about when I worked with Jim Rohn. I was very close with Jim for a long time, and I love that man. He taught me so much. He used to say, pay incredible attention to what you're reading, what you're listening to, what you're watching, and who you're surrounding yourself with. Those four things. And it really does become a conscious effort. What am I reading? Who am I listening to? What am I watching? What am I allowing into this? Because if garbage comes in, you can only already expect that what comes out is going to be relatively similar. Who are you hanging out with? I mean, it's remarkable that we are approximately as financially successful as our 10 closest friends. So take for anybody that's listening to this or seeing this, all you have to do is mentally go through and figure out who are your 10 closest friends, and you're going to be about as successful as the average of all of those. So what does that mean? Oh, you need to be more successful? Upgrade your friends. Well, I don't really mean upgrade your friends. I mean upgrade your relationship with whatever you're trying to accomplish. And if you're not hanging out with people who are pushing you to another level, then maybe you want to consider that. So I think that there's no set formula per se, but being engaged and paying attention to what's going in so that we can expect a different result coming out, I think is super critical.
Yeah. And you mentioned the whole point of mentoring. It's like the student chooses the mentor. You know what I'm saying?
100%.
If you know what you're looking for, let's say for those of you that are listening right now, and you have a dream on your heart and you're going, gosh, someday. Well, someday is now. And so many ways, it's like, whatever that is, it's like, ask yourself some key questions, mm-hmm. Who else cares about this? Who am I listening to? It's like, originally, I didn't know you, but a friend introduced me to you. And mm-hmm. I see you as a mentor for the work that's coming through me. And so those of you that are out there, when you read Ridgely's book, he's got courses and programs, which he'll tell us in a little bit, but he's helping other people learn how to pay it forward once you discover who you are, because other people are going to be seeking you as they're enhancing their relationships. It's very powerful. Now, one of the things that you talk about at the very end of the edicts is that people who suffer from self-doubt or some other self-esteem issue, feel like, well, I couldn't do that. I'm listening to you and originally you could do that. Or yeah, Renee Beth, you work with people that want to do that, but I could never do that. What do you say to those people?
I say, pick up another book, listen to another tape, watch something different, and change your mindset. Because as you mentioned earlier, it's an inside job. Not only is prosperity an inside job, happiness is an inside job. So if you want to be prosperous and happy, got to work on the inner game. The inner game is everything. It always, I know people, you hear this and people kind of doubt it because all they see is the trappings or the exterior, but the trappings and the exterior doesn't happen for people by default. It happens because somebody makes a shift and they begin to understand something. And as a result of a greater understanding, they take a different action. It all starts from our philosophy, our personal philosophy, right? Think about it. Thoughts lead to actions of some kind. Actions determine the results always, not just sometimes. Where does it start? It starts with your thoughts that come from your personal philosophy. So if your personal philosophy is lacking, the only way that that's going to turn into the thoughts that lead to the actions that lead to the results that you're looking for is if the personal philosophy shifts. Otherwise, it's going to be more and more of the same old, whatever that same old is. There is no other way than to raise your vibrational plane, your consciousness, your mindset, your inner game, whatever you want to call it. And I used all those terms so that I encompass a broad range of people. At the end of the day, it's all on you. And what that means is you have the ability 100% to make this happen, which is great. You can be and do and become an amazing person doing incredible things if you shift this first.
Right, your mindset, exactly. Because I love the way you talk about internal learning this code, these 12 edicts, and learning and then internalizing them is like putting together a mosaic puzzle. And could you say a little bit more about that? And then I want you to be able to go right into, because we're almost out of time here. Time goes so fast. Where people could go to learn more about your programs and books.
Okay, so let's suppose somebody has an issue, any kind of an issue, and they decide to take action based on, I'm going to overcome this issue. And they start meditating or praying or chanting or visualizing or whatever it is about this issue. It's not that the issue is automatically going to change. It's that they're going to get some kind of an insight that leads to a realization, that leads to a mental shift, that then leads to a different action that determines a different outcome. So the process is still always internal, even when you're making external efforts to get to that internal game. So for what that's worth, I just think it's so important that we get hip to the concept that it really is all about us and on us completely to take full and total responsibility so that we can open up the space to make a different type of action, which in turn leads to a different result.
So it is like putting a mosaic puzzle together, that in order to see how the other pieces connect, you have to be with the one that you're looking at to see where it fits. And it's like you're designing a masterpiece that's yours. It's got your name on it. There's only one Ridgely Goldsboro, people. We're talking to him right now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right.
Masterpiece of your life. And what you're sharing is how you did it. So where can people go for more information about this book, The Great Ones, The Transformative Power of a Mentor, as well as your other books and programs you've got going on?
I would first send people to mindtypes.com. MindTypes, so MindTypes.com. Go there and figure out your mind type. It's free, it's super fun, and it's fast. Free, fun, and fast. It's good. And that'll give you insights into you, who you are, and what is your superpower, what is your kryptonite, and what do we need to do to work on those things? Because when that is mastered, you can do anything you want. So I would start at mindtypes.com. That's what I would recommend for anybody listening. Go to mindtypes.com, figure out your mind type. It's super fun. And then from that point forward, the world is your oyster.
Fantastic. Well, Ridgely, I'm so excited to meet you and learn more about your work, because you're making such a big difference. And you and I agree that what it means to be a mentor in the 21st century is a lot different than our definition of mentors.
Yeah. Yes.
And a mentor could be a younger person than us. It doesn't necessarily have to be an older person, and it could be someone from a different domain of business or experience than yours. But there's something about how they do what they do that attracts you. And your book is so inspirational. And thank you.
Thank you.
Most of you have tuned in late. This is Renee Beth Poindexter sitting in for Paul O'Brien. Today, we've been visiting with Ridgely Goldsboro. He's written many books, but the one we've talked about today is The Great Ones, A Business Fable, The Transformative Power of a Mentor. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into the Pathways Interview Program, which is broadcast and streamed via KBOO FM Sunday mornings at 8:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Again, this is Renee Beth reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways and its podcast. This is the interview program dedicated to personal transformation and cultural evolution. And thanks so much for tuning in and for being a part of it.